No? Okay, never mind. Okay, here we go. Stay there. If you remember, we saw the contrast between Prakim Aleph to Vav, which was during Mimei Yoshiyahu, and we proved to remember what years of Yoshiyahu to be exact. There has to be a time wherein there is a fear of punishment. The people really are worshipping Avodah Zarah, but they can still do tshuva. So what time is this?
6:27.
6:20. Okay, nice. It has to be sometime from the onset of the time of Yirmiyahu until they find the Sefer Torah. So those were Prakim Aleph to Vav. Remember, it's what changes did we see all of a sudden in Perek Zayin? So just look back at Perek Zayin for a minute, and can anyone remind us?
Negative.
Very nice. Very negative. Much harsher than the first three Prakim, telling us that things are worse. That all that Yirmiyahu says is basically tshuva isn't really going to change anything. It can alleviate the situation a little more to get to what stage? To get to the stage of Ashakna Etzchem. So you can still stay here, even though he seems to be talking simultaneously about a destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Do you remember this? Mm-hmm. Can anyone even highlight for us what the three themes of Perek Zayin are? This will be very significant.
So the Korban of Beit HaMikdash and Shiloh.
Very nice. First, he says, don't listen to all the Nevi'im who say, Hechal Hashem, Hechal Hashem, Hechal Hashem, that Hashem won't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Oh, really? Go to Shiloh. Did Hashem destroy that? Oh, yes. So he speaks about, indeed, the Chorban Beis HaMikdash being like Shiloh. What else does Hashem say? Another new theme.
Don't daven.
Very nice. Al Tetpalo. Yirmiyahu, you're not allowed to daven for them. Why not? It's not going to help anyway. Right? They deserve to be punished. Okay, and what was theme number three? It's also interesting. Karbanot, very nice. Hashem doesn't want their karbanot because they're given without kavana, and therefore don't think that Hashem ideally even commanded the karbanot when they first came out of Mitzrayim. And this is a way of basically encouraging the people to recognize that their karbanot are just going through the actions. Now we said, are the actions doing something? Yes, they're keeping the Shechina, the Beis HaMikdash. But does Hashem want these actions? No, because ultimately they're using them as a justification for going ahead, not just worshipping Avodah Zarah, but also, do you remember the term Ma'arak Paritzim, what you think the Beis HaMikdash is, the mafia hideout? Hashem is basically reprimanding them for justifying their actions simply through bringing karbanot, keeping in mind that there's a lot of ben adam l'chaveiro iniquities that are taking place simultaneously. Now, the problem with this is that we know that Perek Zayin is sometime after when? When could this perek be then? Notice that there's no time frame given. And we're a little bothered because it would be nice if we had some type of flow. Remember we said that one of the skills of Nevuah is going to be to put it in its historical setting. But in order to do that, I have to figure out what the beginning and what the end of a Nevuah is. Generally, it's easy to tell when it says, in this year, at this month, this is when the Navi delivered a Nevuah. What happens if Yirmiyahu doesn't tell me? In order to figure out the context of the Nevuah, and then to figure out what the message is based on its historical context, I have to try, again, to know what the beginning and what the end is. So let's get some sense over here. We know Perek Zayin is worse than Aleph to Vav, so it must have been a different time period. Does it make sense that it was after 622? Not really, meaning in 622 they found the Sefer Torah, and our sense is, certainly from learning Malachim in our very long introduction, that were the people more or less very good during that time period? Yes, again, that was the religious reform of Yoshiyahu. They found the Sefer Torah. They're going to do tshuva, major Karban Pesach. When does it all end? 609 with the death of Yoshiyahu. Do you remember this? So you tell me, when do you think this is? It could be 609, or it could be when? It could be anywhere from 609 until the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash in 586.
But why do you think it isn't before Yoshiyahu found the Sefer Torah?
Very nice, because we already know that these were during the time periods of Yoshiyahu, but when the people deserved Tochachah. So the Aleph Tevav had to be during bad times of Yoshiyahu, when Yirmiyahu is already on the scene. So that was 627 to 622. But this, Perek, is significantly harsher than all of these, which tells me that it probably wasn't the same time period.
Like it can't be like a year later or 2 years later?
So a year later, they're already doing massive tshuva. So I'm sure Yirmiyahu was giving them words of encouragement, not, oh my gosh, the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. What? Well, we're doing good things now, right? Do you see that? So it has to fit the historical context. So this is still, though, a pretty broad historical context. If I think about it, again, close to 25 years over here, we want to try to hone in a little more. So what we're going to do right now, or what you're going to do right now, is a little exercise, namely, as we continue through Yirmiyahu, if we were really just learning through the Prakim, and don't worry, we're going to get through these Prakim, and we're going to see that Perek Chet basically is continuing to give them rebuke for not listening. Again, Perek Tet, take a look at Perek Tet. Pasuk Aleph, Mi Yitzneni Bamidbar, Malon Orchim Vezvata Mi. Yirmiyahu was saying, I wish, Hashem, that I could just leave the people and retire from Nevuah and go to Anatot in my backyard, and people would finally let me stop. Again, people would stop bothering me, and what would I do? And Mi Yitin Roshimayim Ve'inayim Mekor Dama, and I could just cry, Belcham Yitam Ki Kulam Menafim Atzer Bugdim, because they're all so terrible. So we get a sense that Yirmiyahu was bemoaning the Nevuot that he has to give, and he's going to give different messages, and ultimately we don't find another date, take a look, until Perek Chafav. But as we go through the Prakim, you're going to see that there are certain Prakim that seem a little redundant, that seem to more or less be saying similar things. In which case, we have to ask ourselves not only why we don't have dates here, but why Yirmiyahu. It's true that when you learn a lot of Nevuah, it sounds like the Nevi is saying the same thing over and over again, but you're going to see, not to worry, different themes, different ways of saying it. But there are certain times where in Yirmiyahu, you're going to see, oh my gosh, his mama is saying the same words, the same ideas. And why would this be canonized? Not just twice, but you're going to see three times. What do I mean by this? Here we have Perek Zayin. What I'd like you to do is to take a look at Perek Yud Aleph and Perek Chafav. And I'd like you to look for the themes of Perek Yud Aleph. What do you think you're going to find based on what I just said? Certain overlappings with these themes. Now in Perek Chafav, you're going to find also overlapping of these themes, which seems to tell you what? Either Yirmiyahu said the same thing three times, or that's my other possibility. Or they were really all originally one Nevuah at the same time. Which one makes more sense? That he would say the same thing three times and it would actually be written three times? Or that he gave it once and he wrote different aspects of it based on the different themes that he wanted to talk about? What do you think?
One
or the other, right? Which one? Sorry?
One Nevuah.
That it was one Nevuah. Makes more sense that he really only said it once. And it was written down once, but he developed the themes in three different textual contexts, not actual, real historical contexts. Do you see that? So now I'm giving you 20 minutes Chavrusa time. So in fact, do this. You're going to be learning Yud Aleph with your Chavrusa and Perek Chafav, but really with a focus on, oh my gosh, this sounds so familiar. So I want you to write the same thing. Again, make an outline of 1, 2, and 3. Sometimes maybe there are more than those themes. Is that okay? And we're going to try to see what the relationship is between Zayin Yud Aleph and Chafav, what we learned from this, and ultimately, why Yirmiyahu is written this way. Beseder, this is going to be like our life-changing Sefer Yirmiyahu Shir. It's very exciting. Okay, that's right. Thank you. This is good. I hope that what you saw, on one hand, if you were looking through these prakim, not knowing that you're supposed to be looking for things, would you have necessarily have seen some redundancy? What do you think?
A little, right?
Meaning, which words in particular would you have said, oh my, this is really strange? Certain phrases that definitely stood out? How about Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Al Titpalel Bad HaMazeh, meaning the exact same terminology? That's a little strange. And how about in Perek Chafav? What stood out a little there?
He speaks about Shiloh.
And he speaks exactly the same way about Shiloh, meaning not even a different way of convincing them. Mamash, mila b'mila, right? Did you all notice that? But now let's try to see the overall picture. So we're skipping that to Perek Yud Aleph, trying to see what the themes of the Perek are. So who wants to tell me? How does it begin? Yirmiyahu begins by reprimanding them for what? Not following the Brit, right? So we're going to discuss this more when we get to the Perek, but what is this Brit a reference to? What do you think? It's actually a machloket. If this is a reference to, you tell me, what Brit did Am Yisrael break? What are the two possibilities? Either Brit Sinai, again, they broke basically their acceptance or their commitment to observe the Torah, but there are some Parshanim who explain that they broke the Brit that they made during the time of Yoshiyahu. Very nice. That they renewed a Brit. If you see Malachim Be'er Perachav Tala, they renewed a Brit through Karban Pesach, that they were going to re-accept the Torah upon themselves. So this kind of, even though it doesn't have a date, it kind of proves that, oh, it's definitely after the good years of Yoshiyahu, which we more or less knew anyway. So Yirmiyahu reprimands, shame on you. Shimuat divrei habrit hazot v'divartam lishidava yoshvei Yerushalayim, and tell them, they didn't follow my brit. And he continues with this. Look at Pasuk Vav. Vayomer Hashem Elai, krat kol advar me'ela bar yudava chutzot Yerushalayim le'mor shimuat divrei habrit hazot v'asitam otam. Come on, everyone, you have to keep the words of the brit, either the words of the Torah or the words of brit Yoshiyahu, for all intents and purposes, by the way. Is this the same brit? Yes, basically. Where's your commitment to God? And I've been telling them from the time they came out of Mitzrayim that you have to fulfill this brit. Let's take a look at Pasuk Tet. All of a sudden, it seems to be a new theme. What's this new theme that you all saw? Nimsa Kesher. What does Hashem tell Yirmiyahu? Oh, by the way, Yirmiyahu, do you know that there is a Kesher? What's a Kesher? Okay, in this context, what does it mean when Hashem says, you know, there's a kesher amongst the people of Yehuda and specifically the people of Yerushalayim? A kesher is a conspiracy, right? When people join together for something bad, right? A mutiny, right? But really, a conspiracy is the term. You know, Yirmiyahu, there's a conspiracy. Shavu ala vonot avotam harishona, asher me'anu lishmoat divrei, vehim halchu acharei elohim achirim la'ovdam, hefiru beit Yisrael, beit Yehudat, briti asher karati et avotam. Now, what does this conspiracy have to do with the brit? You know, the people of this conspiracy have undermined the brit. You know that they're really bad people. Do you see this? Don't worry, we're going to get back to them. Let's continue. Pasuk Yud Aleph. L'chein ha'mar Hashem hinni mavi aleihem ra'ah. What's God going to do to all those people who have broken the brit? Labriot. Hashem says, I'm going to punish them. They're going to call out to me and I'm not going to listen. And then they're going to start screaming out to the gods that they're sacrificing to. But they're false gods. So they're not going to help them. Shame on you that you have as many gods as you have cities of Yehuda. Pasuk Yudalid. So, I'm sorry for doing this to you. Again, I'm going to put the kesher together with the brit. Right? Hashem says, people, go and rebuke Yirmiyahu. Go and rebuke the people for not listening to the brit. Know that there's a conspiracy, a whole group of people who aren't listening to the brit. I'm going to punish them. And now he says to Yirmiyahu, even though you're a Navi, what do I want you to do? Hannah, so now we already have... Look at this, the exact same terminology. The second theme of Perek Aleph is identical to the second theme of Perek Zayin. Al tetpalel ba'adam hazeh. I know that you want to. I know you want to pray on their behalf, Yirmiyahu, but don't. Al tisah ba'adam rinavu tefillah. Everyone notice verbatim the exact same terminology, which is a little strange. I know it's here. I'm sorry, I'm blocking the door. Here we go. Al tisah rinavu tefillah. Keinini shamaya be'it karam elai be'it ratam. And I'm not listening to them anyway. Madli didi b'viti osatam mezimah. How could they get away with this? How could they, in front of my own eyes, says Hashem, in my own house, how could they perform these atrocities? Look at Pasuk Yudchet. V'Hashem hodiyani ve'ida'ah. As hevitani ma l'lehem. And sure enough, Hashem, let it be known to me the terrible atrocities that they're performing, namely, that they're worshipping Avodah Zarah under God's nose, that they're speaking badly about God. V'ani kekeves aluf yuval utvoach lo yadati ke alai chashu v'shuvot nashchita. Eitz b'lachmo v'nechritu me'eretz chayim u'shmo lo yizacher od. And now that Hashem has divulged to me all the terrible things that they're doing, lo and behold, I will see their vengeance. And then Hashem says, Pasuch Avalech. Again, and we're wondering, where is this coming from? That Yirmiyahu says, I know that Hashem is going to save me and Hashem is going to fight my personal vendettas. Look at Pasuch Avalech. Lachim kama Hashem, alanshei hanotot, hamevakshim et nashecha. Now Hashem reveals to Yirmiyahu, oh, remember I told you that there are people who are breaking my brit, who are part of a conspiracy? Guess what, Yirmiyahu? The same people who are part of this conspiracy, who aren't listening to me and who are sacrificing to other gods, guess what? They're the same people, Anshei Anotot. You know, who's from Anotot? Yirmiyahu. This is a Kohen city. Hey, to tell this you this, Yirmiyahu, but you know some of your own cousins, some of your own family members from Anotot Kohanim, they want to kill you. They are announcing that you should not deliver these messages of God. Because otherwise you're going to die. On what grounds are they going to kill Yirmiyahu? They're going to accuse Yirmiyahu of being a Nevi Sheker, being a false Nevi, for offering such horrific nevuot. Remember I told you I'll take care of the Anshei Kesher? So don't worry. What am I going to do? I am going to punish them. The young men are going to die by sword. They're going to die in starvation, meaning they won't be amongst the survivors. They won't have any remainder. What does that mean? Within the year, Yirmiyahu, they're already going to be punished. So notice these three themes that are definitely all connected. The idea that they're breaking the Brit under Hashem's nose in the Beis HaMikdash, they're offering of Avodah Zarah. In addition, there's also a Kesher, Yirmiyahu, against you and me. So don't daven for them. And ultimately, I want to kill these people of Anotot who want to kill you. Okay, now we turn to Parachafav. Why are we excited when we get to Parachafav? Because opposed to Perek Zayin and opposed to Perek Yudalef, we finally have
a year.
Bereshit Mamlechet Yehoyakim, which we already said is when. Now, generally, we say the beginning of Yehoyakim's rule. If we wanted to tell us Dafka, the first year, what should it have said? Mitzuyan Eliana. It should have said Eibushan Harishon Ali Yehoyakim. You're going to see this phrase over and over again. The beginning of the Yehoyakim Malchut. As opposed to
the end.
Very nice. And when really is the end? So we've already corroborated that that will be from the fourth year and on. And you're going to see throughout Yirmiyahu, most of the nevuot of Yirmiyahu, you're ready for part of our life-changing understanding of the Sefer? Most of the nevuot of Yirmiyahu are going to be given in the fourth year of Yehoyakim, are going to be given in this year, 605. Can anyone tell me what is so significant about this year that's going to motivate Yirmiyahu's nevuot to be preserved for posterity? This is the beginning of the end, right? Everyone say this? Until this year, what could have happened? They still could have pushed it off, right? Remember? From this year on? It's too late. So what's Yirmiyahu going to do at the last minute? Come on, guys, now! It's now or never! It's now or never! Do you see this? That's why most of his nevuot are going to be from this year. Beseder? Or at least most of the nevuot that are going to be preserved. But now, Bereshit Mamlechet Yehoyakim, so I know these are the years, 609 to 605. So I'm very excited because at least I have some date. But now I'm even more excited. Because what are the themes that Yirmiyahu addresses in this parak? Let's begin with the first one. Now we see, what is this, the geographic setting? Just like Perek Zayin. Where was Yirmiyahu told to go over here? Chatzar Beit HaMikdash. And lo and behold, here also, he's in the Chatzar Beit HaMikdash. Hashem says it's going to be a very public nevuah. Make sure that you have a wide audience. Maybe Yirmiyahu, they're going to listen to you and start to do tshuva. And what can I still do? Nichamti doesn't mean that I'm going to completely regret, but what will I do? Maybe I can still calm down a little, alleviate. Very nice. Lasot lahem mipnei ro'am ala lahem v'amratam kol marashem. Im lo tishmoy lai lalach b'torati asher natzat lefnechem l'shmol tzavarai havadai nevim asher anochi sholech etchem v'ashkem v'shaloach, which, by the way, we've seen incorporated in all of the prakim. You haven't listened to the Nevi'im from the moment that I sent them. V'lo shematem v'natatem yatabayit hazeh kishilo v'ta'ir hazot etten l'kolo l'chol goyei ha'aretz. What does this remind us of? Beis HaMikdash, notice verbatim, is going to end up like Shiloh. What does this remind you of? Wait a second, you've already said that. Exactly the same terminology. I'm going to destroy this Beis HaMikdash just like I destroyed Shiloh. Wasn't that over there? Okay, let's go on. Okay, let's continue. Vayishmu hakohanim vanivim v'chol ha'am et Yirmiyahu medaber et hadvarim ha'ila. Now we're going to find a little scene. What scene did you read about? What happens in the scene? Now we find out that when Yirmiyahu said this, when he said that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed, just like it was destroyed in Shiloh, how did people respond? Sheker atah medaber! You're lying, Yirmiyahu! And what are they going to do to Yirmiyahu, these people? The Kohanim who are on Har HaBayit, they're going to sentence him to death as a Navi Sheker. Did you get up to this in Parachafa? Again, this is a fascinating story that happens. The Kohanim that are there are going to be the ones responsible for convicting Yirmiyahu to death. But for a moment, I want you to put yourselves on Har HaBayit. Yirmiyahu just said perhaps the most bombastic religious nevuah that has ever been given, and that is that God's Mikdash is going to be destroyed. If you were there, would you believe Yirmiyahu? I always ask myself this, and I always say, I would have turned to my father and see what he would have done, right? Meaning, think about this. Oh my gosh, Yirmiyahu, how could you say something like this? You must be a Navi Sheker. And they say, how could you do this? Are you out of your mind? This isn't just a harsh nevuah. This is against our religious philosophy. Because what's our religious philosophy? We're supposed to be in Eretz Yisrael with a Beit HaMikdash. You just told us that God is going to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. That's like saying, okay guys, God is sending rockets from Gaza because he doesn't want us to be here. How would you respond to that? That's heresy. Right? Where's your emunah? Right, do you see that? Aviva.
So, if so, then, like, do we really, like, why would he give this nevuah? Like, why would Hashem tell him to give this nevuah if it's so hard to believe? Like,
very nice. So, Yirmiyahu Hashem had already told Yirmiyahu, you're going to have a really hard task before you. And that is to convince them over the years, as the situation gets worse, that this really is a punishment for their sins. And why is it so important that they get the message? Because maybe if they realize that it's a punishment and it's not just a political setback, that's what they're going to convince themselves, then maybe they'll begin a process of tshuva. But if they don't begin the process of tshuva, then what's really going to happen? Everything that Yirmiyahu says. So Hashem knows that Yirmiyahu isn't going to solve these problems overnight. What's the hope?
That
even over the course of these 4 years, hopefully they'll come to some realization. Right? And we're going to see that they don't, unfortunately. I shouldn't have told you that. But let's continue for a moment. Now, are Kohanim allowed to convict a person to death? No, you need. What do you need? Beitin. Excellent. These are the officers. Who are they? They're Sarei Yehuda. They're the officers of the king. So they have to call them. Can you all picture this? Picture Harabayit? Do you have a picture of, I don't know, Kotel area? Where are the Sarei Yehuda? They're in Ir David. You've been to Ir David already?
Yeah.
Excellent. So they have to get them from Ir David to, you know, a hop, skip, and a jump away, but they have to get to Harabayit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how are the Bnei Yisrael also expected to believe it? If, like, it was such a...
Very nice. So that's going to be Yirmiyahu's task. He's going to try many, many different devices to try to prove it to them. One's going to be logic, right? Okay, look at what you're doing. Do you think you're going to get away with this? Again, are you following the instincts? Another is going to be, look at what's going on. Are things getting better or are things getting worse? Now, what are they going to do even as things get worse? They're going to convince themselves that it's just a temporary step back in politics. But Yirmiyahu says, are you out of your mind? Don't you see the writing on the wall? Right? So we're going to see, and he's going to try other methods as well. But, which means that you're right, and El is right, that if I was standing here in Harabayit, I wouldn't necessarily believe Yirmiyahu now. But when should I believe him? I hope in a couple of years from now. Right? And we're going to see, unfortunately, not necessarily the case. But is this a strong nevuah? And you're going to see exactly what happens. A phenomenal scene. They stand up for this, the various sarim of Yehuda. And what did they say? Vayimru ha-kohanim, pasuk yud aleph, ha-kohanim va-nevim el ha-sarim. Ve'okol ha-am le'mor. Mishpat mavet li-shazeh. These are going to be the plaintiffs. And they're going to say, we believe that Yirmiyahu is a Navi Sheker, and therefore you should have him sentenced to death. Why? Because he said something so religiously bombastic. Kini ba el ha-ir hazot kasher shamatem bozenichem. Vayimru Yirmiyahu el-kol ha-sarim. Ve'okol ha-am le'mor. Now, and I'll help me for a minute, what would he... What is Yirmiyahu going to say for his defense? He's his own defense lawyer over here. What's he going to say? Why should you not kill me? Sorry?
Hashem will be even more angry.
Very nice. Meaning, why would I tell you this unless I agree with you? Is what I'm saying very extreme? Yes, yeah, so why would I tell you this if ultimately... And if Hashem didn't send me, right? Do you see this? He's using like reverse psychology. That's number one. He says, number two, can notice what else he's saying? The only reason I'm saying it is, obviously Hashem sent me. Would anyone say something so crazy? No, he says, I agree with you. Right? What I'm saying is very crazy. So it must be, Hashem shlachani li naveh ala bayit vel ha'ir hazot. Et kol advarim asher shamatem. Number two, if you want, what does he argue in Pasuk Yud Gimel? If you want, you can kill me. Right, but just know what? Oh, sorry. No, first number two. He said, I didn't say it as a fait accompli. I just said it to encourage you to do what? To do tshuva, which will help you. So remember we discussed in Kohelet just now, does it ever hurt to see something as a punishment or to expect a punishment? Does that ever really hurt you? No, because what are you going to do? just improve your masim. So Yirmiyahu's argument number one is, why would I say something so crazy unless God sent me? Number two, again, think like a lawyer. He says, and here, I said something very extreme in order to help you do tshuva. So why not just take that as a message and do tshuva? And I didn't say that it was a fait accompli, that it was definitely going to happen, but that's what Hashem wants you to think, so that you'll do tshuva. So shouldn't you just do tshuva? And what does he offer as pseudo-defense number three? But if you really want, then you can kill me. What's excuse number three or argument number three that Yirmiyahu offers?
Well, you could kill me, but you'd be killing somebody innocent, and then even worse things would happen.
Very nice. He says, maybe I'm guilty or maybe I'm innocent, right? This is what's done always with a jury, right? There's insufficient evidence right now. So you could be killing an innocent person. Do you want innocent blood on your hands in addition to all the other terrible things you're doing? Do you see this? Are these three strong arguments? Yes. So who's going to listen? The judges. So notice, what would you call the first theme? We said that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. Now we hear that as soon as the Kohanim hear that, now we hear the elaboration of what story? Remember God said, oh, by the way, they're Kohanim who want you dead? Now we hear that story. Excellent. The people of Anatot, these are his Kohanim. So now we hear the elaboration of the Kesher of the Anshei Anatot. Now we know exactly what God was referring to. Let's go back now to Pasuk Tetzayin. Vayomru hasarim v'chol ha'am el ha'kohanim v'el ha'nevi'im. Ein li'isha ze mishpat mavet. What do the officers, the judges say? We're not going to convict him to death. Ki b'shem Hashem elokeinu diber elinu. Number one, because he spoke in the name of God. Why would he put himself, like we agree with him, why would he say something so bombastic in the name of God that's not true? That's number one. And what he said wasn't really so bombastic, because were there other Nevi'im who gave this message? Micha HaMorashti, who lived about 100 years earlier, during the time of the Assyrians, Hayani baby Mechizkiel Melech Yehuda, Vayomeret Kol Am Yehuda, Leinor Chomar Shem Tzvot Tzion Tzadetach Harash V'Yushalayim Miyim Tiyeh. He said that Yerushalayim was going to be destroyed, V'ar HaBayit L'Bamot Ya'ar, and that Har HaBayit would turn into an empty forest. Did Chizkiyahu and his Beitin kill him because he said something so strange? Halo Yareyat Hashem, V'yichal L'Pnei Hashem. Rather, what did Chizkiyahu do? He used it as a message to do tshuva. So they're really heeding Yirmiyahu's arguments. Number one, I agree. Why would Yirmiyahu say something so crazy if God didn't send him? Number two, we know that other Nevi'im said this, and it encouraged people to do tshuva. So maybe we should do that. And just like God saved the people then, let's be honest, we're really doing bad things. And thirdly, what was Yirmiyahu's third defense? Why would you want to kill innocent blood? Why would you want to take that chance? And they argue there's another Navi who lives now during Yirmiyahu's time, a contemporary of his. What's his name?
Uriah.
He's from Kiryat Yarim. Anyone know where Kiryat Yarim is today? That's today's Tillstone. You know, from here to Yerushalayim, we pass by Kiryat here to Tel Aviv. And wait a second, there's another Navi who's saying the same thing as Yirmiyahu. So chances are, Yirmiyahu's probably not lying about this. And sure enough, everyone heard this. This became a very famous Nevuah of Yirmiyahu's, Vayivakesh HaMelech HaMito. But the king now wants to kill not just Yirmiyahu, but also Uriah, on the grounds of being a Navi Sheker. Vayishma Uriah, Vayira, Vayivrach, Vayavo Mitzrayim. Now that people know Yirmiyahu's Nevuah, they'll also find out about Uriah's Nevuah. And Uriah runs away to Mitzrayim. Why does he run away to Mitzrayim? They're a political ally. He's hoping for a political amnesty, right? Do you see that? To seek asylum in Mitzrayim. But what do you know about Mitzrayim? They're personal allies with Yehoyakim. You know what's going on now in Mitzrayim? Like as of yesterday? The Egyptian president, Musi, was kicked out of his position by the Islamic Brotherhood and fearing for his life. So they kicked him out of his palace. And isn't that amazing? Okay, never mind. Back to this. But the president of Egypt, just like today, he has his own allies. So Jehoiakim himself was a personal ally of this king of Egypt. And therefore, the king sends El Natan ben Achbor and Hashem Yitol Mitzrayim to make sure that Uriah is going to be taken out. And sure enough, he kills Uriah b'cherev, v'yishachet nevatol kivrei b'nei ha'am, and doesn't offer him a respectful funeral. So what should one argue? The king got away with killing Uriah, who's giving the same nevuot as Yirmiyahu. How did Yirmiyahu survive? So we've already seen that the Sarim, the judges of Yehuda, are coming to his defense. Why are the judges of Yehuda coming to Yirmiyahu's defense? If they're ultimately officers of Jehoiakim, so you have to remember, it's the beginning of Jehoiakim's reign, which means that these were also officers under whom? Yoshiyahu, excellent. Which means that they're really pro-Yoshiyahu and Yirmiyahu. They don't like how Jehoiakim has undermined everything that his father has done in terms of restoration of religious nationalism, in terms of restoring political grandeur to the people. So they're anti-Jehoiakim, and henceforth they're really pro-Yirmiyahu. We're going to see that they're probably actual friends of Yirmiyahu, because who are some of these officers? Achikam ben Shafan. Do you remember Shafan? Shafan was friendly with Yirmiyahu's father, Chilkiyahu. Remember, together they found and then read the Sefer Torah that ultimately served as a catalyst for Yoshio's reform. Remember our whole introduction?
Yeah.
So, lo and behold, how did Yirmiyahu survive these accusations, this kesher? Because Achikam ben Shafan, haitat Yirmiyahu levil titetoto b'yat ha'am lahamito. Because Achikam, one of the major political officers, protected Yirmiyahu. So notice this. Basically, Perach Afav is more or less redundant. Again, basically repeats the same ideas that we've already found. Again, one can even argue, he talks a little about the Divrei Habrit. But these ideas of the Beit HaMikdash being like Shiloh, that's a Perek Zayin story. The Kesher of Anotot, that's a Perek Yud Aleph story. So, what? Yirmiyahu actually repeated this again and again? So what makes more sense? When was Perek Yud Aleph given? The same time, also Rishik Ramalach HaJoyakim. When was Perek Zayin given? Very nice. It's the same Nevuah. So why did Yirmiyahu divide up the same Nevuah into three different Prakim of Nevuah? So you tell me, what's the main focus here? The Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed like Shiloh, but really, what's the main focus? We didn't hear about how the people... Very nice. And there's nothing you can do about it, and... Tell the people that it was the main idea. I don't like the way they're bringing karbanos, meaning they think they're innocent, Yirmiyahu. You have to tell them that they are so guilty. What's the main theme here, clearly? That was the longest section. In Perek Yud Aleph. The Brit idea, right? Meaning tell them also that they're breaking their Brit, and he elaborates on the Brit. And then he mentions also, oh, by the way, there's a whole mutiny against you, right, by the people of Anotot. And similarly, you can't daven. Here we find the elaboration of the Anotot story because Yirmiyahu had said something as bombastic as the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed like Shiloh. Everyone see that? So basically, he divides up one Nevuah into three different sections, each one focusing on a different theme. Right here it's, I don't want your karbanot anymore because you're doing everything that doesn't make sense. You've undermined my brit. And here, this is what happens then when the people actually hear Yirmiyahu's warning of the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed. Now, what does this tell you about Sefer Yirmiyahu? Did Yirmiyahu arrange it chronologically? No. If it was chronological, then how should this have appeared? As one nevuah in one perek or two, nachon? Which tells us how is Yirmiyahu arranged, not chronologically, but rather thematically, which you should be used to from Parshanim who say Ein Muktam U'Meuchar B'Torah, right? Which is also not chronological, rather thematic. But this is worse. Why? It's worse than saying Ein Muktam. Why, Aviva?
Oh, no, I was just going to ask that if we're saying that there's similar themes, then
when
it
just
be together.
Very nice. Now, because here he's going to continue from Zion to Yud Aleph, he's going to continue to talk about how they're putting on an act of bringing karbanot, and they really aren't from at all. Here he's going to delve into the breaking my brit, despite the fact that I sent so many kohanim. And here we're going to talking about the fact that they believe he's a Navi Sheker. Isn't that interesting? So we're going to have to go back, I'm sorry, and develop these themes a little more. You're 100% right. But ultimately, and we're going to see how these serve as the jump starts for the themes that he wants to talk about. So he repeats only, right, the little, I'm going to say, what do they call it, like little sound bites right, out of this one nevuah that's relevant to the main messages that he wants to give. Now, this is more problematic than saying, Ein muktam u'mechar b'Torah. Why?
Because that's talking about different events, that just the order is
very
mixed,
nice.
Not one event that's told in three different
Beautiful.
Places.
Do you see this? Like, here we're saying that Yirmiyahu is dividing up one speech into three different places. Excellent. Beautiful, Evie. In addition to the fact that he could have, he knew the chronology. We're not talking about from Sefer Breshit all the way to Sefer Devarim, hundreds of years of Jewish history. We're talking about Yirmiyahu's Nevuot. Why couldn't he just have put it in order? Why does he choose to arrange it thematically and not make it easier for us, like Yechezkel, who's going to be super methodological and super methodical in arranging the calendarical order or the sequence of his Nevuot? So the answer to this is in Perek Lamed Vav. Aniel, you want to? No, you sure? Okay, so now open up Perek Lamed Vav. This is what I meant by. Now we're going to look at Sefer Yirmiyahu very differently. Here we go. What happens? In Perek Lamed Vav, we hear by Hiba Shana HaRevi'it, Leo Yakim Ben Yoshio Melech Yehuda, Haya HaDavar HaZeh El Yirmiyahu Me'et Hashem Lemor. Now we're excited, because when does Perek Lamed Vav occur?
Fourth year.
In the fourth year of Yoyakim, which you already know, is what year?
605.
605 BCE. What year is this? It's Tfilat HaGalut. This is when the Babylonians come in and strip of autonomy. Or we're going to see right before they come in. So this is going to be a central nevuah, as I told you. The most important nevuah are going to be in the fourth year of Yoyakim, because it's the beginning of the end. This also is a very interesting term. Generally, how did people write during that time? It depends. You either write on a Megillah. What's a Megillah?
Scroll.
A scroll. Why would I write something in the form of a scroll? When would I write something in the form of a scroll? Thank you. Right, again, think of like Disney films. Things that I want to read out in a public forum, it's just easier to unroll it. So a Megillah is generally something that's read out to an audience. How about a Sefer? Sefer was written on papyrus in a folio fashion. Right, they only had one side of them. When do I compile something as a Sefer? Not if I'm going to read it out loud, but rather something to study, to read over. Excellent. Generally, what's longer, a Megillah or a Sefer? A Sefer, always, right? A Megillah can't be that long because people just don't have the patience to stand generally and listen to an entire long Megillah, right? You know that Megillat Esther is written as an Igeret, is written as a Megillah. Right, it's the only one that actually is written a priori amongst the Megillot as a Megillah. And it's a pretty long Megillah, right, if you think about it, especially when you're still fasting. But now, back to this. Here, Yirmiyahu is meant to compile a Megillah Sefer. What does that tell you? Something that he has to read out loud, but it's longer than your standard Megillah. Excellent. And probably something that's meant to be probed as well. Right, take a Megillat Sefer. V'katavta elah et kol hadvarim asher dibarti elecha al Yisrael v'al Yehuda v'al kol hagoyim miyom dibarti elecha mimei Yoshiyahu v'ad hayom hazeh. What's Hashem asking Yirmiyahu? I want you now to record all the nevuot that you gave from the time of Yoshiyahu. Wait a second. When did Yirmiyahu begin to prophesy during the time of Yoshiyahu? What year? 627. In other words, how many years worth of nevuah does Hashem want Yirmiyahu to record now? 22 years worth of nevuah, right? You're all 18 years old or so. Imagine if I decided to give you as an assignment, I want you to write down everything that you've learned since kindergarten. Right? What would you say? Shani, that's nuts. And now, firstly, generally, when a Navi received a nevuah, what did he generally do? He received a nevuah. He had to decide, remember, how to interpret it and how to articulate it to the people. Once he composed a nevuah, what did he generally do? He wrote it down. Why?
So that he could remember it.
For him to remember it, to preserve it for posterity. What do we see from here? Was Yirmiyahu writing down his nevuot? Mm-hmm. Why not? You tell me, why don't you think Yirmiyahu wanted to write down all the horrific nevuot that he delivered to the people?
Because maybe he felt that they were so horrific that he didn't want them to remember.
Thank you. He didn't want them to be remembered. He was hoping that maybe they wouldn't come true if the people would do tshuva. Right? Do I really have to write these down? So he would deliver them. Again, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if I want these to really be preserved because I don't want them to come true. Yafem Ode. By writing them down, what is Hashem basically telling Yirmiyahu?
It's going to hurt.
you have to reinforce to the people that this is what's going to happen. Now, do you think Yirmiyahu actually writes down 22 years worth of nevuah? No, he only writes down the years or the nevuot that are still relevant to the people. So which ones? For example, Aleph Tefav, which are Tochacha, right? Do you see this? And I don't even know if he ever did write down all the positive nevuot that he gave. But what is significant over here? So if I would ask you, write down everything you learned in kindergarten. Would you write it like this? Would you write, in kindergarten, I learned the ABCs. In first grade, I learned arithmetic. And within arithmetic, I learned addition and subtraction. In reading, I learned vowels and consonants. In Chumash, I learned Sefer Breshit. In second grade, I learned Sefer Shmot. In arithmetic, I learned division and multiplication. In reading, I learned comprehension and, composition writing. Right? Is that how you would write it all out? Really? In first grade, I learned this. In second grade, I learned this. In third grade, I learned this. So that's one way of writing it. But then I'm not really going to get the messages because I'm going to be so focused on the dates, right? On in first grade. Instead, I'm going to write for Chumash, from kindergarten until now, I learned Hamisha Chumshei Torah and Nevi'im Rishonim, right? For the past 18 years, I've learned multiplication, division, addition, subtraction, fractions, calculus. Right, do you see this? What's the difference? Instead of going through the chronology, I'm going through the subjects, the themes. Do you see that? Now, especially if you're writing 22 years worth, do you really remember? I was making this up as I was going along. Do you really remember what you learned every year? And it's hard for me to imagine that Yirmiyahu really remembered exactly when he gave exact which nevuah. Does he remember the themes that he addressed?
Yeah.
For sure. So how is he going to compile this Megillat Sefer? Now that I understand that it's 22 years worth of nevuot, now I understand how does he... Tell us, he divides it by themes. So now I understand why he wrote Perek Zayin here and Yud Aleph and Chafav. He really gave it as one speech, but he's going to fit in the ideas into other themes that he delivered over the course of 22 years. Everyone following? Yafem Od. Now, I know it's a little complex, but now I understand how Yirmiyahu wrote. It wasn't total anarchy and chaos. Rather, he's writing because he's writing 22 years post facto. Now let's see what happens. The story gets a little worse before it gets better. Take this Megillat Sefer and write down everything that you have said over the past 22 years. Why? Because now he's going to read off 22 years worth, or I'll even argue, closer probably to like 9 years worth, right? Again, the bad years of Yoshiyahu and now the bad years of Yoyakim. I want you to remind the people of everything that you said and all the warnings and all the terrible things that you said are going to happen. And what should they see? Oh my gosh, it's coming true! And ulai, ulai, maybe what will happen? Excellent. You're going to call them for a major religious conference, Yirmiyahu, and maybe Yishmu Beit Yudat Kol Ra'ash Aranochi Choshev La'asot Lahem. Maybe they'll see that everything that I intended really happened. L'man Yashuv Yishmida Kol Ra'ah V'Salachti La'Vanam L'Chatatam. Hashem is saying this is a last minute attempt to get them to do tshuva, which can still do what?
Delay.
Can still delay this. And maybe. Vayikra Yirmiyahu et Baruch Ben Neriya. But you already know, Yirmiyahu can't make any public appearances. Why not?
Because they have
they have a death sentence against him. Excellent. So what does he do instead? He calls his Navi in training, his scribe, Baruch Ben Neriah. So Yirmiyahu dictates the themes that he's delivered over the past 22 years. And Baruch writes them down on this Megillat Sefer. Now Chazal say, what's the Megillat Sefer? Sefer Eicha. Right, have you ever heard this? Why would it make sense that Yirmiyahu perhaps would write Sefer Eicha? As a warning of everything that's going to happen. But the truth is that that's a beautiful midrash. But really, why is it a midrash? Because if you read Sefer Eicha, what is that? Firstly, it's Yirmiyahu's own words. It's not nevuah, number one. Number two, it seems to be written by an eyewitness of the Chorban. Did that actually happen yet?
Mm-hmm.
No. So the pshat of the Megillat Sefer, it are his 22 years worth of nevuah. Chazal see it, though, as something very powerful. Yirmiyahu must have delivered very powerful words. Yes, these years of nevuah, but maybe also Eicha, because because the whole point is to show Am Yisrael of the terrible things that are going to happen. So Yirmiyahu explains to Baruch, Pasukei, Ani Atzor V'lo Chalavo Beit Hashem. I'm locked up. I can't go to the Beis HaMikdash or else they're going to kill me. Uvata ata bekarata vamgila asher katavta mipi et tivrei Hashem bozenei ha'am. So I want you to go, and you're going to read this out loud in front of the people, Beit Hashem, in the Beis HaMikdash. But it has to be a day that a lot of people are there. So what does he say? You're going to go biyom tzom. You're going to go on a fast day, because where do people go on a fast day? Go to the Beis HaMikdash to cry out to God. That's interesting. When would there be a fast day? You can't tell me Tisha B'Av yet because it didn't happen. So based on your knowledge of Tanakh, when do we declare fast days? When we need rain. Very nice. Already in Tanakh you find this. Right? And certainly in the Mishnayot, Masechet Tanit, it talks about the Taniyot for rain.
What do you think that Baruch Ben Neriah would just get the death sentence?
No, because everyone knew that Baruch was Yirmiyahu's student. So he was just like a vice for him. Right, that's all. So here, again, Hashem says, so Yirmiyahu says, go on a day that people are there anyway. So you're going to wait till there's a fast day. And you already said there are going to be fast days for rain. Now, this is fascinating because in Perek Yud Bet of Yirmiyahu, we're going to learn that Yirmiyahu declares a series of batzorot. That Hashem has to tells Yirmiyahu, explain to the people why there are so many droughts. Isn't that interesting? Which means that that's going to be in these years of 609. So for the past 4 years, they've had continuous droughts. I don't know if you remember, before last year, Eretz Yisrael was in a state of drought for 3 years. Do you know this? Had any of you come to Eretz Yisrael, like, I don't know, 2-3 years ago? So we didn't have rain, like mamish, no rain. Like, this is considered a little below average. And it took me a while, even coming to Eretz Yisrael. My year in Eretz Yisrael, the year before me, was called the year of Desert Storm. That was the Iranian attacks, the Saddam Hussein. And my year was known as the year of the snowstorm. That all I remember, Baruch Hashem, a lot of Torah learning. It was a freezing cold year. It snowed 4 times. That's a lot in Yerushalayim. I went to Mechlala. They closed down Mechlala for a week, because no one could get, meaning the snow was this high. Can you imagine that in Eretz Yisrael? So that was my exposure to Eretz Yisrael, which, by the way, really, so that was a harsh winter. But winters in Eretz Yisrael, you see this in Tanakh, meant that for 4 months, what should happen? Should rain, like, almost straight through. That's called the choref. The choref here is the geshem, right? Choref equals not cold. Choref is rainy, right? Like it was last night. That should happen on a regular basis now. But to give you a sense of that, again, from 1992 till about 2002, the years were okay. And then from 2002 until 2012, we had less and less rainfall, but it was horrific because in 9, 10, and 11, I remember winters, mamash, without any rain. Can you imagine that? And it was sunny every day. Like, I remember thinking, like, why do we have raincoats in this country? Why do we have winter coats in this country? Right? Basically, you don't have winter coats. You only have a raincoat, and that's really obsolete when there isn't rain. I remember in 2011, I think it rained 3 days the entire winter, and not like full days even. Isn't that sad? So what happens when there isn't sufficient rainfall in Eretz Yisrael? And that the aquifers go down, meaning we need rain from Shemayim. If not, then many countries have water preserved under the ground, but that's only where there's limestone. But what happens when the water levels go down to a certain level? Then it contaminates whatever good water is there. So it was like just a few centimeters above the line of contamination, which would mean we wouldn't have any natural reservoirs. So the country was in crisis. So firstly, still till today, they tax people now for using too much water. You know this? And that's why you're very careful with your water. And they had to start bringing water into the Kinneret so that the waters from the Kinneret would go into the aquifers. But lo and behold, the waters of the Kinneret reach danger zone. Basically, there's a black line, and then if it goes down to the red line, then like the Kinneret is dead. That means that there's too much algae, and the whole Kinneret becomes contaminated. It's like a serious business. So that's what it came to. Mamish last year was the year. So what would happen? Whenever there's a batzoret, and this we find in Masechet Tanit, if by the end of the month of Kislev there aren't sufficient rains, then the Rabbanut HaRashit LeYisrael till today does what? Declares an Atzeret Tefillah at the Kotel. Right, that happens every once in a while. Last year was an unbelievable year in the sense that, I know, something amazing. there was hardly any rain in Kislev. So was there a Netzaret Tefillah? Yes. And it rains a little over Hanukkah. And then from after Hanukkah, it's considered pretty late, from like mid-January till March, what happens? Anyone remember last year? Maybe if you visited? Baruch Hashem, it rains like, I don't remember, since like 1990s, right? It rains like almost every day. It was beautiful, pouring rain. Then it would stop and start again. So Baruch Hashem, like we're out of the immediate danger zone, but they say we need like 7 years like that to catch up. And you should know that the forecast for this year was originally not that much rain. How are we doing?
We're
a little,
right,
sorry?
It's raining right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
they say yafti, yafti. Baruch Hashem that we're talking about, just so you should appreciate when it rains. And then, oh my gosh, it's raining. What is it in this country?
Yay.
Baruch Hashem, it's raining. What does that mean? It means that I am waiting for my water tax to finally get. It means that I had to turn off the water from my gardening because I can't use that water up. That means that my garden's going to die, but now it's raining, so my garden won't die. It means that I feel the connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the land. Right? Do you see this? A little more in this country, so please don't be upset when it rains, but be happy with the rest of Am Yisrael here. The Seder? Again, my kids literally jump on the beds in the morning, like you do when it snows. That's how they respond to rain over here. So the reason I'm mentioning this is because Yirmiyahu said in Perek Yud Bet, Hashem is bringing droughts to the land. Lo and behold, it's 4 years later, and what do we see? Let's go on to these psukim. Sure enough, and now firstly, Pasuk Zayin, Yirmiyahu explains to Yirmiyahu, Ulai tipol tchinatam levnei Hashem v'yishuv yishmi dakara, why am I sending you Baruch? So maybe they'll do tshuva, and Hashem's wrath will abate. V'yas Baruch b'neria kachal shayt v'yir Yirmiyahu anavi, l'krab v'sefer t'v'yir Hashem v'yit Hashem. Take a look at Pasuk Tet. V'hi v'shana ha-chamishit le'yokim ben Yoshiyah melech Yudah. It's now the fourth, fifth year, meaning it's 605 BCE. B'chodesh ha-tshi'i. What month is it? Guys, what's Chodesh ha-tshi'i? Okay, what month today do we say? Yafe Ma'od. What's the ninth month? Jesse, Kislev. It's Kislev and there's a fast. So you should know, of course there's a fast in Kislev. Why? Because we know this in Masechet Tanit, but now we know this from Tanakh because there hasn't been rain. And sure enough, we're going to turn back to Perek Yud Bet and we're going to say, oh my gosh, there really was a series of Batsuret. So the people have declared a fast day. Baruch says, excellent. Hey guys, it's Kislev. It's so appropriate. He says, I'm going to go up to Arbayit and now I'm going to read from Yirmiyahu's Megillat Sefer. Are you ready for this event? Karutzon lefnei Hashem kol am b'yushan kol am ha-ba'im ha-reyu d'ab'yushan. Just to make you feel better and worse at the same time. On one hand, they're going to the Beis HaMikdash because they're turning to Hashem to appeal to him for rain. Are they very frum? On one hand, yeah, right? They're all going to the Beis HaMikdash to ask Hashem for rain. Just now I meant by making you feel worse. But what are they probably doing also? Thank you very much. Yefem, and I'm sure they're davening to Baal also for rain. Vayikra Baruch B'Sefer, it's a very Yirmiyahu Beit Hashem, B'Lishkat Gemar Yehu Ben Shafan. So who asked about, isn't Baruch's life in danger? Who brought that up? Thank you. Kayla. That's right. So Kayla said, how about Baruch? So now we find Baruch has a private access to Gemar Yehu ben Shafan. Who's Gemar Yehu ben Shafan? Achikam ben Shafan's brothers. These are two officers of Yehoyakim's court who are good friends and supporters of Yirmiyahu. You've been to Ir David and they showed you the Beit Avtinas, the house there. Again, the two-story house where they found bulot, they found stamps, seals that still remain with whose name on it? Gemar Yehu ben Shafan, that's him. I'm sure you opened up Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Vav when you were there. I'm being very serious, like every tour guide knows. Again, oh my gosh, it's this person! So what does that tell you? What was his role in the king's court?
Yeah.
He was... Now the bulot, are stamps, are clay stamps that they would use to seal a letter so that you would know if someone read your letter or not based on whether or not the seal was broken. What happens when you take clay and you burn it? That's harder. So the clay seals remain during the time. Anyone know what they date back to? You can date them with carbon-14 dating. They date back to 586 BCE, which means that Ir David was destroyed, obviously, at the same time as the Beit HaMikdash. It is so cool. I'm sure they told you this because it's so cool. Yafeh. This past Shabbos? And they told you this. Nachon, and isn't it cool that you're learning that perek now? Excellent. So, now you should go back and appreciate it more. So what does that tell you about Gemar Yahu's position in the king's court? What was he? He was a scribe. And we know the scribe, on Har HaBayit there was a lishka, there was a chamber called Lishkat HaSofrim, that's where the scribes would go. So, now we see, Yirmiyahu has, what do we call this today? Protexia, right? And he has protexia through Gemar Yahu ben Shafan, so Baruch gets a private audience, he stands on his Chatzar Elyon on the rooftop of the scribes' chambers, Petach Shar Beit Hashem HaKadosh Bozne Kol HaAm. And sure enough, what does he start to read off? Yirmiyahu's harsh nevuot of the Megillat Sefer. Vayishma Michayahu ben Gemar Yahu ben Shafan, this is Shafan's grandson, et kol divrei Hashem me'al haSefer. And what do you think happens to him? He's probably reminded of what happened during Shafan, his grandfather's time. A similar thing when they read the Sefer Torah and they brought it to Yoshiyahu. And what did Yoshiyahu do? He panicked. Remember, he cried, he tore his clothes, and that was great because that began a major religious reform. So Michayahu apparently remembers this. So what does he do? He goes to the Beit HaMelech, Alishkato Sefer, V'Nesham Kol HaSarim Yoshvim. He goes to Ir David, and there all the governors, all the officers of Yoyakim's court are sitting, Elishama HaSofer, Vilayahu ben Shemaya, El Natan ben Achbor, Gemar Yahu ben Shafan, Tzidkiyahu ben Chananya, V'Chol HaSarim. Meaning, we'll call them even Yoshiyahu's cabinet. V'Yagel Ben Michayahu, Kol HaDvar Mesher Shamea, V'Krol Baruch, V'Sifar Bozenei HaAm. He comes and he says, you know what's going on now in our bayit? Baruch is living in Yahu's Nivur, and it's so freaky. Then you should hear what he's saying. What's he saying things like? And he's talking about how we left the bridge, and he's talking about again how people wanted to kill him. He's reviewing all these nevuot. Yeah, do you know what's going on? Well, what? So what did they say? They tell him. Here we go. Excuse me. Excuse me, this apparently was an officer of the court who was used as a messenger. Who would you use as your messengers? Your fastest runners. So we're going to see he's a runner. And they say, go, run now. And they send Yehudi ben Kushi to go and run and bring Baruch with the Megillah so that he can read it where? In front of the king. Lo and behold, Vayimoy Lav Shevna Ukrena Bozneinu. First, let's us hear what you have to say. Vayikra Baruch Bozneihem. Vayikeshama Metol Advarim. Pachadu Ish Al Reyehu. What does this remind you of? They really panic, just like Yoshiyahu finding the Sefer Torah. Vayimro Baruch Hagina Gidla Melech. We have to tell the king this. Oh my gosh, this just corroborates what happened during the time of Yoshiyahu. Meaning, what do they realize? Everything that the Tochacha says in Sefer Dvarim that Yoshiyahu heard and was nervous about, and Huldah said, yes, it's going to happen, but you can do tshuva. Now they hear Yirmiyahu saying that?
They can't
do tshuva because it's going to happen. So they say, we have to tell the king right away. And what are they hoping the king's going to do? Cry, tear his clothing, start some level of religious reform. So at least what can they do? Alleviate this somewhat. Sure enough, they ask Kayla's question. Wait a second, how do you write this down? Isn't your Yirmiyahu under lock and key? No, he said this. I just transcribed it. But they realize then the danger. So now, Kayla, they tell Baruch, what should you do? If the king finds out that you were somewhat involved, he's going to want you killed. So go, you and your Mio, go into hiding. Don't tell anyone where you're going now. They realize that Yehoyakim may not respond like Yoshiyahu. So first they tell the king, do you know what your Mio has been saying? So the king says, I want to see this Megillah. And the Navi tells you, oh, by the way, a little bit of foreshadowing. The king is sitting where? In his winter palace. Why? In his winter room. Because it's ninth month. What's it like outside?
Cold.
It's chilly. So what do you have in a winter room? A fireplace. Why do we have to hear that a fireplace is burning right now? Because what's going to happen? And where are your gemarot here? Ah, right there. Okay. Quickly, we're gemara for a minute. what do you call a page of Gemara? But really, how was it originally written? Not double-sided. Every daf has two amudim. You should know the Talmud Yerushalmi, every daf has four amudim. Now, why are they called amudim? An amud is a column of like a house, right? A structure. Right? So I want you to picture this. Originally, an amud was an amud, a column, and a page was, second, an amud was a column, and every few columns is called not a daf, but a delet. Isn't that cute? Right? As if a composition is like a building. So he read more or less three pages worth. By the time he got to the fourth one, Yoyakim starts to tear it, Bitar HaSofer, with, you know, like one of the scribal shears, it's called, like an envelope cutter. Can you picture this? Again, this is an old-fashioned paper shredder. He starts to shred it. Now, why is this very depressing? Yirmiyahu wrote down 22 years worth of Nevuah. How long do you think that took him? It's like a major term paper. Right, did this ever happen to you? It doesn't happen anymore. In my day, before there were hard drives, again, I make myself sound so old, but you can still, this can happen to you today. You can lose your entire doctoral thesis. How? Like one delete if you didn't save it. Right, so today, you could always retrieve everything on your hard drive. You know this? But people should have backup hard drives. Right? But can you imagine this? Again, he lost it all. He destroyed the entire Megillat Ifer. What is he basically saying? What message is he trying to give?
This has no relevance to me.
No relevance to me. I don't care about this. I don't believe this. V'lo pachadu. And notice what the Navi says. V'lo karu et bigdehem. Meaning, he didn't respond like his father. All those who were standing near him. So the ones who were around during Yoshio's time try again to talk to the king. They entreat upon the king. I always imagine, remember that scene in Mary Poppins where the father throws Jane and Michael's letter into the fireplace and then ultimately Mary Poppins puts it together. And now they're begging him, don't tear up this letter. But unfortunately, it's not put in, but it's not going to be compiled together. And but the king doesn't listen to them. So sure enough, the king sends out his own son, together with other high officers, and he says, go fetch Yirmiyahu. Why? What does he want to do?
Kill him.
V'yisterin Hashem. And yet, Hashem, just like Hashem had promised Yirmiyahu, you're going to have various adversaries. They're going to want to kill you. They're going to try to kill you. Sometimes they're going to get very close to killing you, Yirmiyahu. But what did Hashem assure Yirmiyahu? I will save you. Here's a good example. It's not over yet. What does Hashem tell Yirmiyahu? You have to rewrite the whole thing. And then I want you to go to Yoyakim and tell him, Komar Hashem, Ata sarafta ta megillah hazot? You burnt this? Lemor, Mado katavta elei lemor, Bo yavo melech bavel, Vishchit et haaretz hazot, Vishbib memena adam ul behema. Just you wait and see. The king of Babylonia is coming in, and he's going to fulfill everything that I said over here. He's going to destroy this land and the people. You had a chance, and now you gave up that chance. You're not going to have any descendants sitting on this throne. Even nivlatotia mushlechet, even your corpse isn't going to have a proper burial, and we know this. And you're going to see Yerushalayim fall during your days, Yoyakim. And now perhaps the most important pasuk in all of Sefer Yirmiyahu, are you all ready? What is the Navi telling us? Yirmiyahu rewrote. He rewrote which chapters, basically? Prakim Aleph through Lamed Vav. Right? Do you see this? But you're going to see in these Prakim, what should they include? All the Navot that Yirmiyahu gave from the 13th year of Yoshiyahu, from 627 until what year are we now? until 6:05. So I'm going to surprise you. And firstly, we already saw that how does he develop the Nevuot then? Not chronologically, because he's writing them in retrospect, so he is going to write them thematically. But what does the Nevi tell us? You're going to find in these 36 Prakim some Nevuot that he even gave during the time of Tzidkiyahu. When does Tzidkiyahu live? Starting 597. But I thought that these are the Nevuot from 27 years worth of Nevuah. So notice, what does the Nevi say? What did Yirmiyahu do? Because he developed these Nevuot thematically, if later on he's going to develop another Nevuah, he's going to develop another Nevuah that can fit into one of these themes, what will he do? He'll cut and paste them into this Megillat Sefer. Does everyone see that? I'll give you an example. Okay, let's say, here we go. Right, are you all, you're all compiling a diary of your Shana Ba'aretz? Mm-hmm. Right, many of you with pictures? Yeah, with Happy of the Seder. And so right now, you're compiling it chronologically, right, every day? If you were, though, let's say you're a little lazy. So let's say next year, you decide that you're going to go back and write about your Shana Ba'alef experiences. Are you going to be able to write on Chav Gimel Kislev, this is what I did? No. How are you going to write instead? Alright, this is what I learned in Shalvim from him. This is when we went to, Ir David. Now, it could be that you go to Ir David 3-4 times, but you're going to put them all together because very nice. It's going to be thematically arranged. Now, let's say you, Be'ezrat Hashem, you're going to come back Shanabet, or at least for a visit Shanabet. So what are you probably going to do? You'll incorporate even your post-Shana Aleph experiences into your Shana Aleph experiences. Do you see that? Meaning, if a similar theme comes up later, you'll just cut and paste it earlier. Got that? So really, what would I call Sefer Yirmiyahu? I'm going to say that Sefer Yirmiyahu is divided into two sections. Prakim Aleph to Lamed Vav. What's the nickname for these Prakim? Where's my Aleph to Lamed Vav? Here. Aleph to Lamed Vav.
Above the 620. 627.
Ah, thank you. Nachon. Todah Rabbah. What's Aleph to Lamed Vav? Now, what are we calling this? The Megillat Sefer, which includes primarily what? Everything that Yirmiyahu said from, we said, 627 till 605 BCE, with what added? With events, even all the way to the Chorban that fit into this. So now let me ask you, that's one section. And then I have from Perek Lamed Zayin until the end of the Sefer. So you tell me, what's the theme of Lamed Zayin to the end? These are going to be new themes that come up from the end of Yoyakim through Tzidkiyahu. What type of new themes? We're going to see that this is going to be more the historical details of what happens all the way until the Chorban. Do you see that? Because basically, Yirmiyahu is just going to be repeating the same themes over and over through the time of Tzidkiyahu. So the only things that are really kept separate are the events that happen from 605 all the way to 586 and beyond. So now it makes it much easier for us to learn Yirmiyahu. Why? How are we going to learn it? Thematically, is that okay? We're going to see the different themes from Zayin to Lamed Vav. And guess what? Then we'll have one or two shiurim from Lamed Zayin all the way to the end of the Sefer to know historically what happened from the fourth year of Yoyakim and on. Even when it comes to the themes, I'm going to make you feel better and tell you that we're not going to read them all inside, because then we'll continue Yirmiyahu for the next 2 years. Rather, we're going to just choose themes, and I'm going to show you how Yirmiyahu develops these themes. Is it there? Okay.